the tide.
Now I see why you sleep in the bath.
The two of you are sitting opposite each other in Morgan's front room. He's made you a cup of tea, apologises for not having any milk in, and has sat you down, given you another towel, and the two of you have been talking. You've explained your side of the story, everything you know, everything that's been happening to you at night over the last couple of days, the dreams and the encounter last night with the figure with the torch. And he nods and offers a soft, mirthless chuckle and says,
yeah, that's why. Sounds like you've been having pretty much the same experience as me.
Same dreams?
Similar. They have the same shape, but well, mine take place here, in the house. Yours take place in the B&B. I think maybe where you go to sleep makes a difference. But I've been having them ever since, I think, two nights after he died. That's when I had the first one.
This is like some horror novel nonsense.
Yeah, you're telling me. I mean, that's why I didn't tell you. I would sound crazy. And, you know, no offense or anything, but I've only known you for a couple of days.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have told you either.
Yeah.
And I suppose it'd only have taken me a couple more nights of this to end up sleeping in the bath, so, you know.
It's just more practical. I got sick of changing sheets.
I don't even change my sheets, but explaining it was quite something.
Presumably you have somebody to change your sheets for you there in the B&B.
Yeah, well, that was the problem.
What do you mean?
Well, how do you say to the host of this B&B, I had a dream and now I'm covered in seawater?
I see the predicament, yeah.
I gave her a sort of line about a leak in the room. She's very strange. I genuinely had started to concoct. Maybe this woman is secretly has it in for me. She's, you know, what was that guy, World's Fair, murdered all those people in his strange hotel?
Jack the Ripper.
No.
What?
No, that wasn't, Jack the Ripper didn't have a strange hotel.
Okay. I'll admit I don't know what you're talking about. If you say so.
Yeah. Late 19th century. Murdered a bunch of people.
Right. So you think Grace might be...
Well, I thought so, because I kept waking up in the night covered in water, and then I woke up this morning, and then there was someone in my doorway with a torch.
Well, I've never had anything like that happen to me, so...
So maybe what you're saying is maybe Grace still is H.H. Holmes.
Could be, if I'm following your analogy right. But the dreams, for me, what's weird about them is I think you've had similar experiences. You've seen things that you shouldn't know inside the dreams. I think it was my third or fourth I decided to figure out that I couldn't really move beyond the fog. I could push past it a little bit, but not properly. I managed to... He looks a little, like, ashamed. He says, well, I was just experimenting. I tried breaking Rena's window and sneaking in.
Why?
Just to see if I could. I mean, it was a dream.
You don't think Rena's in on it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No. But she was in there, in the dream, and she was on the phone and with her mum, and she was crying. And I think she said, like, he'll be okay. Or something, and I thought initially it was something to do with Ian, but then the next morning I saw her and she told me that her dad was sick.
Huh.
I think I was seeing a real conversation that really happened, and what's more, I saw inside her house. I mean, things that I've never been in there. She doesn't invite me in. I don't think. I mean, it's impossible.
Yeah, I'm glad we agree on that.
So, what do you think's happening? Because for me, it's hard to get the idea out of my head that, well, you said Ian talks to you. He's somewhere in the dream.
Yeah.
And you have to find him.
Have you not heard Ian?
I've heard him. I found him. I did the same thing you did first time, only it was here and he was up in the attic rather than
right
in the cellar. But the same thing happened. The walls broke in the flood.
Flood.
But he said the same thing. He said, Morgan, find me.
What do you think about that, by the way? The Flood. Ian wasn't much of a swimmer.
No.
I think he could swim. He didn't go to the swimming baths, regularly in Manchester.
He says, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, but listen, I don't know how to say this without sounding crazy, but if I'm crazy, then I think you're the same kind. So I think he's still alive.
Still alive?
That's the feeling I get when I have those dreams, is that he is somewhere out there in some form calling out to me. Well, to us.
I know what you mean. I think I told myself I was just wishful thinking, that I was having some kind of break, that this was me trying to find out what happened.
You were looking for some way to explain something that couldn't be explained.
Yeah. And even if I engage this flight of fancy, this story of the dreams bringing information we don't have, even if we lean right into that, if I was writing it, I think I'd say that this was Ian's ghost.
Morgan kind of shrugs and says, a ghost is better than nothing.
Yeah.
If he's out there in some form, wouldn't you want to know? Because here's the thing, I've had those dreams every single night ever since Ian died, except for one. One night where I didn't dream at all. It was totally empty. And that was the night that I left Kingstide. I went to a cousin's wedding near Birmingham and stayed over, and I didn't have the dream. And then I came back home and had the dream again the next night. So I think the two of us are having the dream because of two things. First, we're both here in Kingstide. And second, we both knew Ian.
That tracks. It's almost nice to know this isn't going to follow me home.
But it also means that wherever he is, or wherever it is, it's somewhere in this town.
Yeah. And I don't mean to give you the impression that I'm going home. Short of digging up that grave, there's no way of knowing.
I thought about it.
You have?
Well, not in real life, but... Well, it's like breaking Rena's window. I woke up, the window wasn't broken. You can do what you want in the dream.
I suppose you can.
Haven't done it. You can't get to the church.
From here.
Through the fog.
From here.
Yeah?
Well, I mean, you have been camping?
Oh, I see. Oh, do you think they'd let us?
No.
More crime.
I think if finding out is either really digging up a grave or sleeping near one, I know which I choose.
Feels more like a desperate last resort than anything else, doesn't it? I mean, we've got other leads. You were saying last night.
Yeah, well, today I'm going to talk to Casey Emerson.
The old guy?
Yes. He must have been at the funeral for a reason. If you don't know why he knew Ian, that means that Ian was not telling you something.
I suppose so.
I mean, I know Ian knew everyone, but...
Not here, he didn't.
This isn't a... particularly his kind of social scene.
No. You can say that again. So where is he? Are you going to go to his house?
Well, I know two things. He works up at the weather station. Maybe lives up there. On the north side of the bay.
Right.
So I could go up there today.
Okay.
But Keris is in the garage and it's a long way.
Bit of a trek.
Yeah. And honestly, if I was really on holiday here, that might be quite nice. But I know he comes down into town today, Friday, for his fish supper.
Oh, all right.
Right, I think I watch him go in. When he comes out, I'm leaning, you know, in those, you know, detective novels. Like leaning on the wall, like Casey Emerson. And they'll be like, ooh.
You want me to hold a smoke machine behind you?
Yeah. If possible, I was hoping you had one.
You really think that'll work? You think he'll just talk to you?
I think if he came to Ian's funeral, then he might have been a friend. I think he lives far enough out of town that if there is some kind of mum's the word conspiracy going on in this place, then he might be outside of it.
Maybe.
Either way, he's our best lead.
Okay. What about till then?
Russell reaches into the pocket of the same... jeans he was wearing yesterday. Pulls out. I've got a receipt of the car, the
oh, from the mechanic?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a little soggy now, but yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I guess you didn't sleep in your jeans.
No, but I did put them on wet.
Yeah.
so I'm looking at it, you know, Signature Motor Services.
That's right.
I spoke to Errol.
Yeah.
Does it have any more details on it?
What kind of details are you looking for?
Like a surname for Errol? Or like...
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think at the bottom it says you were served today by E. Dillman.
Dillman. All right. Well, until then, I think I figured out our EDBD situation. The initials on the ledger you looked at.
Hmm.
Errol Dillman and his brother, who's ill currently.
Oh, they work together.
Yeah.
So they split the jobs.
Can you remember which one dealt with, and I can hazard a guess, which one dealt with the Ford, our Ford Mondeo?
Yeah, it was BD.
Yeah, I thought so. My guess is that this brother dealt with scrapping this car.
So you're going to go talk to him? Isn't he in hospital?
I intend to look into the scrapping of that car. Now we can go to the scrapyard. I don't actually know where it is yet. Totter's Lane?
Yeah, you can find out on your A to Z, yeah. I think. I mean, that's kind of what an A to Z is for,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can alphabetically.
And as I say this, I pull out the A to Z, and again, a little soggy now, tattered around the edges because it's been shoved in my pocket.
It's curling slightly at one corner.
Yeah, and I start folding it out on the kitchen table, scoop aside some, you know, scissors, some fabric scissors.
Yes.
and start pouring over it, looking for Totter's Lane.
Morgan watches you from the corner, but doesn't interfere. He lets you do your detective thing. No role needed there. Very easy, I think, to find a, you know, you've got the name of the place, so that's absolutely fine. It is actually not too far away from your current position. Certainly, you're going in the right direction. It's sort of behind a park, which is a slightly odd place to have a scrapyard. But there is a green park, Woodrow Park, on the opposite side of which is Totter's Lane. It doesn't have a scrapyard listed, but there is it's a pretty large, like, road. There would be plenty of room for one. You can also, by the way, there's like a little kind of a key of sort of useful locations on one side. And actually the police station is one of them where you've already been. There is also Kingstide General Hospital, which, just scanning down, appears to be the only medical centre, or major medical centre in town. So you have the location of both of those.
Cool. And how far away are each of those?
Totter's Lane is probably about a 20-minute walk. Kingstide General is actually closer to the centre, so you're looking at maybe a 10 to 15-minute walk.
All right.
If you're brisk about it.
Mm-hmm. We could probably get both of those done in a day.
Sure.
If you haven't any more trousers to sew.
I mean, I do, as a matter of fact, but it can wait. Which one first?
The more I think about it, the less I feel like I'm particularly proficient at just getting people to tell me things in this place, generally.
I think you're too nice.
I mean, look at me. It's not like I'm very scary.
I suppose not.
I prefer to have the facts. The scrap heap feels like it's the facts, and then I can put those facts to a person, and then that person can't tell me those facts aren't real, you know?
Yeah, I see your logic.
That's why I haven't been to the cafe yet. I mean, what am I going to say to them? I think that you're lying that you haven't seen a car accident.
You say you heard a glass smash?
Yeah.
In the dream. And a car and a scream. Do you think that was...
That was the accident. I'm sure of it.
The smash was... What, the windshield?
I assume so. Any collision with a car, there's going to be a dent or something. Yes, I think that the windshield might have been cracked.
All right. In a way, you're lucky, you know. I didn't even think about sleeping somewhere else, like, closer to the accident. And I'm not saying it's nice, but you get to see how it played out.
Morgan, you're a genius.
Okay.
Forget the churchyard.
Okay.
There's a flat above the cafe.
Okay. Morgan's not getting it.
I'm gonna rent out that flat.
Oh. And then you'll be able to... Oh. That's smart. But how soon can you do that?
I don't know. We're going to the cafe to ask.
Fine. Scrapyard first? Or cafe first? Now we've got too many things to do, Russell.
Yeah, we've got too many things to do. But the cafe is close to the chip shop, so we might be able to get both of those done in the afternoon.
Right. Okay. Oh, Do you want a change of clothes?
Yeah.
It's probably for the best. I've probably got something that will fit you. I mean, actually, I've got... I've still got Ian's stuff. Haven't thrown it away or anything. You can go and have a look.
Sure, yeah. Thanks.
He takes you upstairs into the main bedroom here. There are actually two bedrooms, but one of them is filled up with boxes. It looks like those boxes have been here for about as long as they've moved in.
Never been packed.
Yeah, I think so. Whereas the bedroom looks pretty much pristine. Kind of untouched.
Having never been slept in.
Yeah, Morgan sort of hunches his shoulders slightly and says, I don't really need to come up here anymore.
Yeah, that sounds hard.
He shrugs and just says, it's been hard. But in a weird way, the dreams, I know they feel scary to you. They felt scary to me as well.
But it's like a link.
He's there.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, help yourself, whatever you want. And he points over to a chest of drawers. You pick your way through?
Yeah. I imagine I find quite a few of my own clothes.
Stuff that Ian, like, took.
Yeah. Like, I pull through and pull out, like, a t-shirt that I was wearing 2 years ago that I left round... left around Ian's,
and he just claimed,
and then he just like went,
that's gay culture.
Yes it is. And also we haven't spoken since we broke up, right? Like, there was no reclaiming of things we left around each other's houses. I had a bunch of Ian's stuff, Ian had a bunch of my stuff, and we just didn't see each other again.
Sure, that's a slightly spooky set of conditions, but yeah, you find yourself dressed in your own clothes.
As many as I can.
Yeah.
I don't think Ian took my underwear, but I'm taking his. Just solving that problem of running out. I believe I'm on my last pair.
Yeah, I think so.
I've been counting.
That's good. Glad you're keeping track of the important stats.
I've got a little inventory here. So I come back down wearing a pair of high-waisted jeans. It's a bit of a mismatch.
Yeah.
White t-shirt and a sort of plaid long shirt over the top.
What colour?
It's sort of a green grey.
Okay.
A little red, kind of the very centre of each square is red.
Mm-hmm.
And my hair's still a mess, but I look in the mirror on the way past the bathroom and reset my party.
Sure.
And head downstairs again.
Morgan glances up at you, nods. Good enough. All right, let's go.
As we start walking toward the scrap heap, I'm like, good enough.
Totter's Lane, nice long road, easy enough to find with your A to Z in hand, and is dominated by the scrapyard on the opposite side of the park, sort of ring fenced all the way around it, with just the one entrance, just the one way through, although the fence looks kind of worn, and actually one corner almost collapsed in one side. There's all sorts of crap in here, but cars are definitely the majority of what you see. Once you've arrived, you kind of feel yourself having dried off a little bit. Your head is still kind of throbbing with pain, and you can't help but that paranoia still fills you. All of that stuff is still affecting you as you head in. There are cars kind of piled up in one corner. There are washing machines in another, as well as other kind of white goods. There's a couple of fridges. Many of them have been kind of stripped for parts, it looks like. Bits sort of laid out in front of them. Brown, like, signs written on remnants of cardboard boxes, detailing models and makes in a scratchy, shitty handwriting. The only kind of permanent building in here is a little hut just by the entrance. It's almost like a kind of porter cabin. Thing on cinder blocks with steps going up. The door is open, and you can see there is a figure, an older man, sitting at a desk inside.
I start heading toward the front gate.
Mm-hmm.
And then pause. You said there's a park here
opposite. Yeah.
Is there a way I can take a second to try and step down this fear?
Well, like, you'd like to look for a moment of calm.
I would like to do some breathing, if possible.
I think that's perfectly fine.
I think Russell gets to this point sees that he's going to have a meeting with a new person.
Yeah.
And then...
probably gets the shakes a little bit. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You can retreat slightly. Morgan's going to kind of follow you, but not really knowing what's going on. But keeps a bit of a distance as you enter the park. And yeah, it's sort of the middle of a Friday. It's still kind of late morning now, so the park is not particularly full. It looks to be a couple of school students in one corner skiving off. You resist the urge to call their parents. Do you think that would calm you down?
It's just normalcy, you know.
But there is a little pond with still water along the top, and beautiful kind of blue-green plants rising up out of it. A perfect place to sit and relax and take a moment. Let's make a recovery test. So, like last time, the difficulty is 2d8 plus a d10 because you are afraid d10. So you have an 11 to beat.
That's quite high.
It's on the higher side, but I think it's doable.
Okay, well, let's go. So that's a 12.
Nice, that's a success.
With two hitches.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see. So your effect die... I assume is a d4 by default, right?
Yeah,
because you have nothing else.
Hitches for effect dice.
No, that's right. So, because your effect die is not bigger than your complication, you only successfully step it down rather than clear it entirely.
Ah, that's better than nothing.
So you are afraid d8. I think we'll give you another new complication. I think that feels appropriate, and then I can really start piling them on.
Yeah.
Let's go for paranoid d8. But you do earn a plot point for the privilege.
I can't help feeling like I've made my situation worse.
Still, your breathing is a little more regulated, even if you are slightly more aware of your surroundings and not in a good way.
I'm starting to feel that man in the hut. Maybe he's seen that I'm sitting in the park across the way. Maybe he's starting to think, why has this person nearly come up to the door?
Maybe he's shredding documents as we speak.
Yeah, could easily be. What are those children doing? Are they in on it?
They appear to be playing some kind of game with a ball and racket. Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Morgan touches you on the shoulder and you jump out of your skin. Oh, sorry. You ready to go?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How do you want to approach this? More sneaking off? He doesn't really have a back office.
We could just ask, I suppose.
I guess so, but if he is in on it, then...
It's tipping a hand.
And even if he isn't, but he thinks... I mean, you think the car might be damaged... From the hit and run, right?
Yeah.
If that's the case, he might, even if he isn't in on it, he might not take kindly to people asking about. Well, he might be like a ask no questions kind of guy.
That's true.
You could say you're interested in
buying the parts for Mondeo. That's more straight talking. I'm not. I can try. Our alternative is rooting around blindly in a scrap heap. I mean, car's pretty big.
Yeah.
With any luck, it's not been crushed yet. Might be difficult to do whilst also not being seen.
Well, we don't have to not be seen, do we? We're customers.
I suppose so. Yeah, all right. We can do that. So, we're cousins looking for a...
His face kind of creases up. All right.
Looking for a... exhaust for Mondeo.
Got it. You take the lead.
I'll do my best. Ruffle my hair up a bit as a tick and then head and walk up to the booth.
There's a gentleman in there. He... spots you as you're coming up. You can see inside there's like a very pokey little office there, pretty disorganized, papers sort of strewn around everywhere. And then on the opposite side of the porter's cabin, there is a very small kind of workshop, a few tools being sold, some air fresheners as well, and then like a cardboard box with some like chocolates in. That look like they've been on sale since like 1989. You swear you see like some opal fruits in there. The man leans back in his like office chair, swivels over to you and says, "Right, gents.
Hey, just having a look around for some parts for a for Mondeo.
All right, what parts do you need?
Oh, it's mainly the exhaust, bits and bobs here and there, but." You know, you've got anything like that in?
Yeah, try, he
points to one corner of the scrapyard. Third pile back, I reckon.
Nice. Cheers, man.
He nods.
Head nonchalantly.
In that direction.
Looking incredibly casual.
Sure. He's kind of watching out the window. Yeah, let's have an incredibly casual roll, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to try and be incredibly casual about this. You've got so many dice.
Well, you've got so many complications. So good news, bad news. I've got a 14, pretty high.
Yeah.
He's pretty watchful at the moment. But the good news is there is one opportunity sitting there.
Okay.
So you can spend a plot point to step something down.
Definitely I will. I'll step down paranoia.
Down to D6?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, try and construct a roll to not look so sus. Morgan will help if you'd like.
I'll start with Perfect Stranger. Can I add Keris here for my knowledge of cars? Probably not.
I don't think so, no. If you had a specialty of cars,
yeah,
then you could add that.
Okay.
Which you're probably wishing you took.
Yep. I didn't know so much of this was going to involve cars. So,
yeah, that's fair.
Probably focus again.
Yeah.
What do you think? Cunning?
Cunning seems good.
And none of the rest is going to help me.
No, but Morgan will help you as he side-eyes you and sees you kind of nervously looking back at the porter's cabin. He's going to look back and just glare daggers at the man in the cabin there, just make direct eye contact with him and just like give him like a look like, what are you looking at?
Oh, is he being intimidating?
He's going to give you Menace D8.
Ooh, Morgan.
You could spend a plot point and do Keris if you wanted. I'd be more lenient if you're spending a point for it.
I wonder if I can add my wits to this.
I don't think so.
No?
No, I'm not sure it's quite wits based.
Alright. Could I make it a knowledge roll? Like add knowledge to it?
Like a I know what I'm doing kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of I'm heading in the direction of the right car.
Yeah, sure. That sounds good.
Okay, here we go.
Good luck.
We've got 5d8s here.
14 to beat.
14 to beat. Unlikely, but here we go.
What do you got?
So, best I can do here is 12.
Okay. Is that spending plot points to add anything? Or is that just best two?
That's the best two.
Okay.
So I've got two hitches in there.
Right.
Which means if I add another dice, I can't get an effect dice any higher than 4.
Yeah.
I could add my hero dice,
yeah,
which is a d6,
yeah,
to try and get above 14.
Should be good.
You'd hope.
You would.
I have to spend a plot point to do that as well.
It is a plot point to use a hero die.
But I've got 3 left. I'm going
to
do it.
And, spoilers, I'm about to give you another one.
I was going to say. Yeah. I think I've rolled 2 hitches. It's unlikely that I'm not going to receive a
irresistible, yeah, to a GM like me.
Exactly. So I'm going to roll a d6, my hero die. I got a 3, which means I get 15, which beats the total.
Very good.
With a d8 effect die.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, with a d8 effect die, he the man in the porter cabin sort of looks away at Morgan's glare and at your kind of confident walk. You just learn not to sort of look back, and he doesn't pay you any mind after that. You have free rein to kind of do whatever you want. But you do have 2 hitches there, and I can't not activate those. So go ahead and take another...
You can.
I won't. Take another plot point. Let's make you paranoid D10. You are really certain that everybody's out to get you.
Relatively sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's a conspiracy in this entire town. Mm. Everyone is in on it.
Yeah. Still, you manage to navigate to the section that he has described of the scrapyard. Easy enough to find, and you don't even need to roll to see a nearly kind of good as new, almost good as new, brown Ford Mondeo kind of just sitting there. It's not been crushed, it's not even really been picked at very much. Many of the other cars sort of here, you know, the bumper is gone, or the wing mirrors have been taken on some of them. This one, pretty clean for the most part, but notably, the very front of the car has been dented, and you can't help look at it and think of an impact.
I think when Russell sees that, there's a sharp intake of breath.
Yeah.
Probably unable to not, like, tip Morgan off to it. To the fact that I've seen something.
Yeah, the two of you stop short. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, there's one theory out of the way. Look, the windscreen. Morgan points and you can see the front windscreen of the car is fine. It's not been cracked. The very front of the car has been dented, but whatever impact made that dent, you're trying hard not to think about the details, but whatever did that didn't crack the window.
Doesn't make any sense. I heard smashing glass. What smashed?
What do we do now? The license plate has been taken off the car, but that looks to be true for all of them.
You said Ian was going to the cafe.
To get lunch.
I just don't understand. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, because, like, you've got to realize, I heard smashed glass.
But you didn't see it. There's something else to see, right?
Yeah. Right, yes, well, we'll figure that out later. And Russell steps up toward the car and tries to pull the door open.
The door's actually already left open. Presumably the guy's got the keys, maybe. But it looks like all the cars here that are intact enough to have their doors kept, the doors have been left open, so people can access the interior. Much like the exterior, hasn't really been touched. There's even like an air freshener in the rear view that hasn't been touched.
I'd like to go through the glove box.
Of course.
Footwells.
Yeah. The footwells look to be pretty much empty. There's a packet of Quavers, an empty packet of Quavers. The footwells are otherwise empty. You check the front. Morgan checks the back, has a look over, mutters, "If that guy sees us, he's going to think we don't know where an exhaust is."
I said, among other things.
You check the front and you pull open the glove box. Inside, there is an A to Z of Kingstide. A little bit cleaner than your own.
Nice. Swap it.
Nice little inventory upgrade. Although it looks to be an older edition, a couple of years earlier. I think yours is from this year, right? Because you bought it for this trip. So the one in the car is 96. As you pull it out to replace it with your own, something falls out of it onto the seat. There is a brown manila envelope open at the front, unmarked on both sides.
But it's open.
Yes.
Have a look into it.
You pull out the documents in there. There's a few of them, but they're not loads. It's not packed. And there's really kind of one main sheet of paper, double-sided, written in a looping kind of old-fashioned handwriting that it takes you a little while to just kind of pick through what it's actually saying. It looks to be a list or even a schedule, sort of like an agenda for the day. You know, you see like noon 15, lunch, 1:15, back home, that kind of thing. But next to it in the envelope are three printed glossy photographs taken at a distance in a poor image quality, slightly tilted angles, slightly washed out light, but their subject crystal clear. There are pictures of Ian. Thank you for listening. For more information, visit tide.show.